This hour of Kevin Miller in the Morning is brought to you by Tway Travel, your adventure travel specialists. Fighting for America.
We did exactly what needed to be done in order to catch those who were guilty on 9/11 and to prevent a further attack. And we were successful on both parts.
This report says it was not successful.
The report's full of crap.
Fighting for Idaho.
The president has the legal authority now. It's exactly the same legal authority that he had 6 years ago, and he didn't do anything about it. And since then, he has deported more than 2 million immigrants.
Fighting for you.
No, Kevin, I logged 35,000 miles on my Chevy pickup in the last year.
I hope it wasn't a lease.
And it wasn't. And our roads aren't bad.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Good morning, Kevin Miller in the Morning here. Our great friend John Wohlstetter with us. Letter from the Capitol, his blog, letterfromthecapitol.com. John, good to have you with us, sir.
Great to be with you as always.
You know, I wish we had some good news to talk about, but you're always investigating things that are uncomfortable. And let's start with the fight against ISIS, sir.
Well, look, we have a half-hearted effort that is underway where the president is using less than 10% on the numbers I've heard of available combat power from the air. And it is hard to see how he can, with such a half-hearted effort, prevail. He has at least now, there is one good news that it involves ISIS in part, and that is that the Kurds and the Iraqi central government have apparently reached an oil-sharing accord under which the Kurds will get 17%, roughly proportionate to their share of production. And this was a very big deal because the administration foolishly was shoving the Kurds into the Iraqi government's clutches when at this point it is in our interest to have a Kurdistan, which could draw from several countries, would give us more reliable basing than we're getting from Turkey now, would be an oil exporting state, etc. At least that is somewhat of a good development. But on balance, it's still the administration seems to be subordinating everything in the Mideast to having some sort of entente with Iran, which is a fantasy and a dangerous one at that.
Well, what's really happening in Iraq, continuing with the fight against ISIS? It seems like the administration is slowly doing some mission creep there.
Well, yeah, they're being dragged into a conflict they said they weren't going to be dragged into because Obama recklessly ignored the advice of his generals, apparently unanimous, and even for God's sakes, Chuck Hagel, who's nobody's idea of a hawk, that you can't just walk out of there. Hagel got on the chopping block because he didn't like the idea of taking instruction from the likes of Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, and Valerie Jarrett on national security matters about which the other three know nothing.
Jonathan Wohlstetter with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning here at 580 KIDO. Jonathan, you're an expert in these matters. How dangerous is ISIS? We keep hearing and seeing these horrible beheadings, the brutality. It's indescribable.
Well, ISIS certainly poses a threat that we need to take note of. It controls areas right now in the Mideast that are larger than some of the countries there. At one point, it was the size of France. Now, I haven't followed the geographic stuff by day-to-day or anything like that. That makes it a consequential force. And it, in addition to that, it imperils the Kurds, who are our best allies. They take in $2 billion a year. They have had copycat attacks in Europe, and you can expect to see more of them in the United States. So they are a threat. Are they a worse threat than a nuclear Iran? No, I don't think so. Or a nuclear North Korea that decides to move? I don't think so. They may not even be worse than the cyber war threat, but they're still a very real threat, and it was avoidable. These are the remnants of al-Qaeda in Iraq, which in 2009 told Zawahiri told them, pull out of Iraq, we've lost. And at the end of that year, Obama said, we have a stable and secure Iraq, and it's directly the product of his refusal to get a status of forces agreement by insisting on a condition he knew was a deal-breaker, getting approval of the parliament, which you don't get in these kinds of things, and Bush never saw it, that they didn't get the arrangement, and so he pulled out so he could keep a campaign promise, and now he's got us in a mess there that was entirely avoidable.
Letter from thecapitol.com, our great friend Jonathan Wohlstetter with us, Kevin Miller in the morning, on 580 KIDO. Were you shocked that the Pentagon, or I believe it was the Pentagon, started issuing warnings to U.S. service personnel in this country? Be careful what you put on social media. Be careful what you do in this country because of a possible ISIS attack on them here?
Well, I wasn't shocked that that kind of threat would be made. This is one of the most potent threats they can make to our sense of security. I must say that I was heartened by Medal of Honor winner Dakota Meyer this morning on Fox News in the morning. Fox and Friends said he wasn't changing anything for these guys. He's not going to knuckle under. But the fact is they have vulnerable family members. Recall that back even 30 years ago or 25, 1987, Iran-Contra, when Oliver North testified before the Iran-Contra committee, he pointed out that he had received direct threats from Abu Nidal, who was a leading terrorist leader of that generation, one of the top ones. So these things do happen, and they are very hard to counter because we can't bring it in ourselves to say, if you make our families a target, we're going to make yours.
Well, and again, we see that with many things. Let's move on to Afghanistan, if we could, and the partial pullout. Does that impact the region of what is going to happen in Afghanistan, certainly with our not-so-friends, the Iranians and the Iraqis and everybody else?
Well, it impacts. Of course it has an impact on that. We live in a global fishbowl where what we do in any corner of the world resonates around the world and is readily discoverable, unless we manage to keep things secret, which is not one of our strong points generally. And the fact is that when Obama came in, he looked at this war with, he didn't much like it either. I mean, nobody likes war, I shouldn't put it that way, but he decided he wanted to get out as much as he could. And so he kept undershooting what the generals asked for, and he kept saying we'd be out by such and such a date, which of course undercuts much of your effectiveness. You got to be there as once you take on the commitment, you have to be there as long as it takes. He then passed up an opportunity to help an opposition leader take power from Karzai, Hamid Karzai, who was double-crossing us in 09. Now he's keeping a few thousand troops there, but it's hard to believe that it's enough. And the Taliban were saying all through that first decade, you have the watch, we have the time.
And we do see that. Let's move on now and talk about Iran. We have Pastor Saeed Abedini, a local guy here. His wife continues to raise awareness. Other Americans being held by the Iranians, and yet the administration, as they continue to try and make these deals with the Iranians, as you've talked about, refuses to help our fellow Americans.
Well, the administration is pursuing a fantasy that a regime that is revolutionary in character, whose avowed purpose is to overthrow, to kick us out of that region and eventually overthrow the great Satan, that we can bargain with them. And there are limited situations where you can make deals with adversaries. We could make a deal with Moscow, avoiding accidental war. We had a mutual interest in that. Then when you get a Gorbachev in, you get a chance for reform. He, to his credit, didn't, when he saw that his efforts were unraveling faster the country, he stood aside rather than forcibly keeping everyone in. Or a Sadat, who is scared Jimmy Carter wants a grand peace conference with terrorists at the table, so Sadat goes to Jerusalem to preempt that. Or you get a situation with China where a little over 40 years ago, fearing a first strike by Moscow, a nuclear strike after there had been clashes in Siberia, and learning that Moscow had sounded out us as to how we'd feel, we were not sympathetic, they made a deal with us, not out of the love of the United States, because Mao woke up one day and wanted a McDonald's in China. They made the deal because Mao could only think of one guarantor who could provide them with protection of some sorts, even if we weren't explicitly committed to coming to their aid. By making an alliance with us, they made it harder for Moscow to consider the possibility of a nuclear first strike.
Right, and again, here we have the Iranians that have vowed to destroy us again and again and again, and we have our fellow Americans who are being held there, and who knows if they'll ever be released. The administration, as you've talked about, has this fantasy, but why in the world do they not say, okay, we're going to give you this, but we want our people back?
Well, the thing is that once we support, once we support the idea of an entente, we subordinate everything to it. And there is no indication that the Iranians fit into those categories I mentioned, Gorbachev, Sadat, or Mao, who wasn't interested in reform but was interested in getting an insurance policy. The Iranians see themselves as winning. They have not the slightest intention of being deflected from their program. It proceeds apace. They're trying to get a right to enrich. And the only reason that we don't have a deal with them is the Iranians think they can take us to the cleaners further. The longer they hold out, the more desperate the administration becomes.
Indeed. And, of course, we have these folks that supposedly know that world. Jonathan, do you expect the administration to continue to capitulate to Iran?
I think it's going to be a continued capitulation. Congress may try to stiffen their spine in the new Congress by passing mandatory sanctions legislation, but this president enforces only those laws that he cares to enforce. By the time they take him to court, it'll be over. I think that he'll eventually make an executive agreement, probably after the election in 2 years. He'll get strung out. The Iranians have no interest in getting into an accord with him in 7 months or at any time, because once they do that, then the issue of their compliance gets teed up, even though they have no intention of complying, and the administration won't meaningfully enforce compliance, which is very hard to do. So they'll continue to get concessions as they get more desperate.
More from Jonathan Wohlstetter, Letter from the Capitol next. Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO.
Sean Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
580 KIDO, Jonathan Wohlstetter with us, letterfromthecapitol.com, his blog. What's going on there, by the way, if people want to check you out, sir?
Well, I focused on some micro issues. I just came back from a little time out of town. What I have for this week, three posts, one on Jim Webb on Monday, who I call the last true Democrat, who has almost no chance to get the nomination because of the base of the Democratic Party being far left. Second, a rather amusing thing I got sent on Obamacare, which explains the illogic behind we're going to insure more people and lower costs at the same time. And third, Mahmoud Abbas, Palestine Authority president, over the weekend, the mask slipped that he said at a conclave in Cairo, an Arab conclave, that he would never accept a Jewish state. So, you know, how much clearer do you need it?
I'm with you, but let me hit you with this one. How dangerous a world is the world Israel's living in right now?
Well, Israel is in great danger because it is beset on all sides. The United States is supposedly its greatest friend. I think probably Canada or Australia would qualify as that in terms of diplomatic diplomacy, because they don't pressure Israel. They have an administration that is convinced that Israel is at fault in the dispute with the Palestinians, and therefore that Israel should continue to make unilateral concessions. The Israelis don't feel that way, but they are so obsessed with the Palestinian thing that they're endangering our relationship with Israel. Kerry, incredibly, when it became clear that there's going to be elections, which will probably be held in March in Israel, he said he hoped it didn't get in the way of peace with the Palestinians. Where has he been? On what planet? Netanyahu is dead center in the Israeli public political spectrum on the Palestinians. Dead center. In the last 20 years, the Israeli public has moved sharply rightward as they see that they don't have a partner for peace in the Palestinians. And this administration is going to make sure it never learns that.
Is this the most anti-Israeli administration we've seen?
Yeah, despite close defense cooperation for much of the time, because that was necessitated because Israeli equipment was saving American lives, and the American military would have revolted if they cut off that access. But here in this in the Gaza war, they delayed shipments of military equipment to Israel that had already been always been an automatic pilot to pressure Israel into ending the war. Now, Israel probably would have done so anyway because they weren't prepared to spend a year or two cleaning out things in Gaza. But this administration clearly is worried more about what Israel will do, such as bombing Iran, such as another war, which they'll blame Israel with, than they are on the Palestinians. It's tragic.
Do you believe that Israel will attack Iran?
I think the odds are against it. The problem Israel has is that the minute they attack Iran, they're going to have this administration go berserk. And because the negotiations will continue to drag out, they will be accused of disrupting a chance for peace, even though it's complete nonsense. And I think that they what they really want to do, and I don't blame them, is to string it out as long as they think they can, hopefully getting to a point where they have a new administration they can get some help from. They're not going to get it from this administration.
What does the new Congress mean for the Israelis, if anything?
Well, it'll be more pro-Israel. It'll have more Republicans in it. And they'll be able to pass bills and send them to the president, but he can ignore them or veto them. The president has the edge in foreign policy. It's going to be very hard to compel him to do anything he doesn't want to do.
Jonathan Wohlstetter with us, Kevin Miller in the morning here, 580 KIDO. So let's take a look at a few of our other friends, if you will. Let's talk about, our friend Mr. Putin and what he's up to.
Well, what Mr. Putin is up to is consolidating his position in Ukraine. And I think that there's a good chance he will move in one or more of the Baltic countries before he leaves the office because he knows he has a patsy now. And he doesn't know what he'll have in 2 years.
What about Poland?
Well, Poland, of course, was furious at the Obama administration for how it handled the missile defense switch of negotiating with Moscow behind Poland's back. Now, a signal this week of how little Obama cares about the area is that he nominated this soap opera star, whose name escapes me, to be the next ambassador to Hungary, and she couldn't name a single interest we have with Hungary. I wonder if she can even find it on a map. So he obviously doesn't place a high priority on Eastern Europe, and this is a very serious problem.
Indeed. I just worry about the Poles because, again, as you know, let's face it, that's where everything seems to start. Would that be something that the West would actually say, enough, we will stand behind the Poles and not let you do to the Poles what you've done to the Ukraine?
Again, it's very hard to move an American president on these things, especially one who is as willing to claim executive power repeatedly, even if he's slapped down as he has been often by the courts.
Do you expect the president to be slapped down with this Obamacare decision coming up?
Well, one never knows what the Supreme Court will do, but I think the odds, the portents lean in that direction. They didn't have to take the case. They didn't wait for the rehearing in the District of Columbia circuit, where the three judges that Harry Reid put on this, and Obama put on that court by bypassing the filibuster, made it likely that that court would reverse the lower ruling, and then there would be no conflicting decision to appeal. If you get a conflict between circuits, the Supreme Court has to let you know what federal law is. They didn't wait for that hearing. They called it up there, even though they didn't have to at this point. And when they do something like that, more often than not, they reverse or vacate the decision. But that again, nothing is certain with the Supremes.
No, we've seen that recently here at 580KIDO, and we're not going to do it yet, but coming up, I do want to talk to you about the Citizens United case. And, you know, as we're talking a little bit about some of our friends, we've covered Putin and Russia and the situation in the Ukraine. What about China?
Well, China is making a bid for supremacy in the Western Pacific. It, like Russia, has a huge military modernization program. China's, I think, is the most aggressive on the planet. They are modernizing everything across the board, and they will be a formidable power. They and Russia also pose two of the largest cyber threats to the United States.
And yet they're supposedly our friends because they're one of our largest trading partners, if you will.
Well, I wouldn't confuse the two.
How does that work? How can we, on one hand, have trade with China when they're trying to undermine us all the time?
Well, because the commerce is so large, we're dependent on a lot of imports, and they're dependent on capital flows. But this will go by the wayside if we get in any kind of a conflict, of course.
It does make you wonder on that, as far as what they're doing with Japan and everything else in the South China Sea.
Yeah, it's very dangerous.
More coming up with Jonathan Wohlstetter, Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580KIDO. Don't forget, you can always catch us on Facebook, Twitter, 580KIDO.com. We do have a Kevin Miller Show page now on Facebook, and we urge you to go there. We're always posting stories so you have the most complete, up-to-date information available to you when we can therefore comment about it on the radio. We don't have to waste time going, hey, this, this, and that. We always make sure that we have those stories posted throughout the day. If you want to catch up with Jonathan Wohlstetter, you can always get him letterfromthecapitol.com, where he blogs about his experiences, of course, gives his take on the big events facing us. You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
Glenn Beck, weekdays at 9. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580KIDO. Jonathan Wohlstetter with us here. Letter from the Capitol, his blog. Jonathan, let's talk about the Citizens United free speech case that a lot of folks, including a lot of people here locally, think that this has been the undoing of the Constitution, the undoing of election laws. What's your take?
Well, it's the revitalization of the First Amendment in the core area of First Amendment constitutionally protected speech, political speech. And the efforts to silence, the selectively silence opponents of of the administration is really what's behind their being upset with it, because corporations could begin to respond to what unions are running. It created a more level playing field, and that upsets the left considerably. As far as corruption, there's no proof of that that was submitted in the case. This is a First Amendment issue. We need more political speech, not less.
Yet, on the other hand, you have the left saying that it allows folks to buy the votes. But let me hit you with this. the president really, because he opted out of federal matching funds, we never know the source of his money. And he had quite a lot in both two elections.
He had close to a $1 billion election last time. But, I mean, is it worse taking money from contributors, as long as you don't have a direct quid pro quo? You're not breaking the law, but is it worse to be beholden to some of your supporters there, or to be beholden to supporters on some other basis? I mean, the fact is that politicians from time immemorial have tried to raise funds. There's if you create a public funding mechanism and tax everyone, then how do you decide who's eligible for it? And there are many ways to game these systems. It's the First Amendment. It's a very disorderly thing. I think that they will be unsuccessful, at least for now, in getting Citizen United overturned. If Obama could put a few more people on the court, replacing some of the older conservative justices, he could remake things. What made the election so important is now a majority, and they can not only... the Senate majority can keep a judge from being confirmed, but they put in a rules, that make it, easier to go after them. This is what Obama wants to do.
Well, Jonathan Wolstetter with us, Kevin Miller in the Morning, 580 KIDO. How do you feel about the Supreme Court right now?
Well, petrified, because you never know what they're going to do. They're poised at a knife edge. Anthony Kennedy, I don't know what side of the bet he got out of this morning. You have a 4-4, and you have 2 years. You have maximum danger between now and the beginning of the new Congress, which is in the first week of January. If there's a vacancy, does Obama try and ram one through? Because once he gets to a Republican Senate, at least they can force these nominees to go through the kind of grilling that Republicans have gotten. You just take a list of questions that were asked Roberts and Alito and say, okay, we're going to ask you these questions. They answered them. Why don't you answer them?
It seems to be that the Republicans are afraid of the bad publicity, and it doesn't seem to matter whether or not they ask the questions or not. They're still going to get smacked, so you would hope, as you've suggested, that they would grill these folks, but they never seem to live up to that.
Well, they need finesse. You go in, if you get a nominee, all right, and he nominates somebody like Deval Patrick, who's a real pal of his, the liberal governor, or I think he's no longer governor of Massachusetts, or he's about to step down. And you say, Mr. Patrick, I welcome you to the hearing today. I've got a few questions for you, and these are questions that were posed to Republican nominees. Samuel Alito John Roberts, and so on, and you say, are you willing to answer them to color our perception of where you are on this, or are you willing not to answer them?
Right, right. We'll see. The Supreme Court is so important. I don't think a lot of people understand. That's really why elections matter.
Well, yeah. They matter a great deal, if for nothing else. Because the president will have an unmatched influence on the judiciary if he gets all his nominees through, which he will with Harry Reid.
Right, and of course, we've had a lot of victories involving the Second Amendment that easily could have gone 5-4 the other way.
Oh, sure. In lots of areas.
It is crazy when you think about this. In the upcoming year internationally, what do you expect to see? More problems with China, Russia, or Iran? Who's going to be the leader as far as the troublemakers?
Oh, God, that's really a toss-up. I think if Russia, the most immediate threat might be Russia in Ukraine. Not Ukraine, in the Baltics. If Russia goes in the Baltics, the United States is obligated by the 1949 NATO treaty to physically eject them by force if need be. If they don't do so, their entire alliance system collapses. So the Iranians are still on a nuclear, on a nuclear path. They may already have enough material to make a weapon or two, but it's their interest to have a bunch of weapons when they break out. So I think the most immediate threat is Russia. China's threat is still a few years away, but Russia's is in full gear.
Well, how competent is the Russian military?
They have a veneer of troops at the top that are probably quite good, but they're not as good as ours. But the conscript side of their army is in very bad shape. But what they might do if there were a confrontation is use tactical nuclear weapons. Putin just might do that.
Boy, that
would be catastrophic.
That would be a first.
Yep.
And how is our nuclear arsenal?
It's deteriorating. Under 5,000 total stockpile of active warheads are now under 1,550, and he'll take it under 1,000 if he thinks he can get away with it.
And like I said, it comes back to this infrastructure, whether or not we're willing to invest in it.
Well, it's all of $23 billion to maintain the nuclear infrastructure, going up to 35. Figures of opponents are vastly inflated. We can well afford it. It's 0.4% of our federal, something like it. It's a fraction of our federal budget.
Letter.
It's an even smaller fraction of GDP.
Letter from the Capitol. Our great friend Jonathan Wolstetter with us here at 580KIDO with Kevin Miller in the morning. Jonathan, a final thought for you. When we take a look at Obamacare and we take a look at all the, get out of jail free cards are over, what is it going to mean to the American economy?
Well, we're not going to get over that anytime soon. And I think that there are so many problems the economy faces. We're going to be, I think, in a period of protracted slow growth at best. And if we get some shocks, it could turn into a recession again. I just don't see any big upsides out there. There are some bubbles building again. Many of the regulations that have been adopted are counterproductive, creating the possibility of too big to fail again. It's very scary. It's a very difficult and dangerous time.
Jonathan, we appreciate it. Thank you for your time, sir.
Kevin, always a pleasure to be with you and your audience.
All right. Have a good day.
You too.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KID.
Dave Ramsey, weekdays at noon. Now back to Kevin Miller on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning. Just a Miller's point of sanity here for a moment. I'm just looking at a couple stories, and folks, we need to come together now more than ever. And I'm not talking about in some politically correct, mamby-pamby, rooty-poo, mosh, politically Pollyanna correct way of saying this thing. But look at what we're up against. We continue talking about race relations in this country, gay relations in this country. And one of the things that gets me, and this happened, last week. And I'm just getting around to it. And I'm sorry about this, but we have some spare time. By the way, thank you, Jonathan Wolstetter. We appreciate you coming on and giving us your insight here at 580KIDO, but I'm sitting here looking at this story, and it's about Michael Sam. And you remember Michael Sam. He was the standout at the University of Missouri, and he was, and look at Michael Sam. I'm gay, and I've got a boyfriend, and I'm going to give him a kiss on TV, and everything's great. And look at the St. Louis Rams. They're sitting there having a good time and putting their hands up, and we love Michael Sam, and it doesn't matter that he's gay, and how dare that reporter ask about what happens in the showers? Yeah, I know. It's crazy. If we'd go back in the hot tub time machine 10 years ago and think this is what we'd be talking about. But Michael Sam now is saying that he's not in the NFL because he's gay. Now, which is it? Did we know who Michael Sam was before he came out of the closet? Well, if you followed football religiously, I suppose he was the SEC media darling player of the year. defensively, and yeah, that means that you're something. But just because you succeed in college does not mean that you're going to be all that in the NFL. Mr. Sam, you live in a great country that does not discriminate, and those people that stand up in opposition based on good, relevant, traditional American values, instead of having a dialogue, debate, discussion, they are ridiculed. The fact that you didn't make the NFL, it's because you're not good enough. Face it. And by the way, coming out of the closet, as opposed to America 5 or 10 years ago, gets you celebrity notoriety. You were mentioned by President Obama. You're talking about your courage. Don't do a disservice to all the people, rightly or wrongly, who backed you, protected you, promoted you, praised you by claiming sour grapes. It just doesn't work that way. Mr. Sam, I don't know how it is in other parts of America, but in Idaho, we accept our challenges and we move on. You would do yourself a favor and learn by the great examples of everyone here in the Gem State. Just a few words of wisdom, folks. You can't take your ball and bat, gay or not, and leave the ball field if you lose. Kevin Miller,